Last week was an eye-opener for us, the Indian consumers.
India's beloved Maggie maker is slipping into yet another controversy. It's a report, and this report has come from a Swiss investigative organization. It highlights that the FMCG company Nestle has been adding sugar and honey to some of their infant food products in India.
Well, doctors and researchers from the Rajagiri Hospital in Kerala, they analyzed 36 different protein powders, and what they found is that a staggering 70% of those 36 samples that they picked up did not reveal the right protein information. In some cases, the protein content was only half of what was advertised on the pack.
Hong Kong has banned the sale of MDH private and Everest Food Products private curry spices after detecting the carcinogenic pesticide ethylene oxide in them. On a separate and similar move, Singapore has pulled Everest products off its shelves, citing the presence of pesticides above safe levels.
Many of us would have suspected all along that the processed foods that we consume in India are of questionable quality. But the evidence coming in over the last week has been quite overwhelming. Baby foods have sugar added to them. Protein powders don't have enough proteins, and our good old masalas could have ingredients that are carcinogenic. Today's episode of the Morning Brief podcast is all about probing into the condition of India's broken food safety. Is it a case of not having food safety laws, or is it about the poor enforcement? What prompts multinational companies from adopting discriminatory food standards across their different markets? And what should we in India be most worried about? To discuss this, I speak to pediatrician Dr. Arun Gupta, who is convener of Nutrition Advocacy in Public Interest on NAPI.
It's not just adding sugar, it's adding sugar and aggressively, deceptively, misleadingly using health claims, projecting your products as healthy, using children in your product advertising. All that actually is undermining the health of our children.
I also speak to New York-based award-winning journalist Michael Moss, whose investigation of the processed foods industry culminated in the best-selling book, Sugar, Salt, Fat.
Everybody in India should understand these companies are coming for you now, basically viewing countries like India as the new Wild West in terms of their ability to get more people hooked on their products.
And I speak to my colleague Ratna Bhushan, who has been at the forefront of reporting on these issues pertaining to India's FMCG industry.
There is a lot of pushback on companies, investor pressures there, influencer backlash, health nutritionist backlash is already there.
It is Tuesday, April 23rd. From the Economic Times, I'm your host Kiran Somvanshi, and this is the Morning Brief. In 2015, I met the management of Manpasand Beverages, the makers of Mango Sip drink, and I asked them why the company's product was essentially a sugar syrup. I still remember the CEO's reply quite vividly. He told me an average Indian is hardworking and involved in physical labor. The high sugar in the drink actually provides Indians with the much-needed energy. Such and many other flawed arguments are given to justify the high use of sugar in food products in India, an industry practice that does not even spare babies. Incidentally, the stock price of Nestle India has dropped over 4.5% since the news of sugar being added to its baby foods became known. I turn to Ratna to understand what has been the progress on the fast-developing issue.
So Kiran, Nestle says it has reduced added sugar content by 30% in Cerelac over the last 5 years. It says it regularly evaluates its portfolio to reduce sugar levels and draws on global R&D. And an important point to note here, Kiran, is that Nestle says that it is fully compliant with Codex standards and local specifications. So local specifications, in my opinion, is the key here. Existing FSSAI guidelines allows the company to add this amount of sugar. Of course, I asked them on why this distinction of adding sugar to baby foods in India and other Asian countries and African countries and not in the UK and European countries. So on that, Nestle's response is that variations in recipes depends on factors including regulation and availability of local ingredients. So you see, Kiran, again, there's a pattern. A lot of it is coming down to local regulation. But again, right, for the world's largest foods maker, that's not convincing defense at all. You know, one of Nestle's own websites provides guidance for infant nutrition, and I just saw this myself, and it explicitly advises against incorporating sugar while preparing meals for infants or providing them with sugary beverages. This is on their own platform. And they say that, you know, consumers should scrutinize packaging and should avoid sugar, especially for babies, because then it addicts babies when they're starting off, you know, their life journey. So all this doesn't amount to walking the talk at all as far as Nestle is concerned.
So if they're pointing kind of fingers to the local regulation, let's come to, you know, what has been FSSAI's stand on this issue. So do you see regulator taking serious action in this regard?
So as of Thursday, Kiran, FSSAI said it is probing the issue and it is widening the probe to include other baby foods. The Central Consumer Protection Authority, which is the CCPA, has also directed FSSAI to examine the matter. But the question is, will any regulation coming from FSSAI be stringent enough, or will it have enough maneuvering space for brands to find safe exits? You know, also, a National Commission for Protection of Child Rights has said in a letter to FSSAI, that was late Thursday, to release the number of baby foods companies registered with FSSAI and provide standard guidelines for infant foods within 7 days. So there is a timeline. And there is pressure from, you know, this National Commission for Child Rights, there's pressure from CCPA, which falls under the DOCA or the Consumer Affairs Ministry.
Typically, how long, you know, such probes last for FSSAI? How does it typically work?
So, you know that the biggest bone of contention is, you know, front of pack labeling, which is, you know, I think as far as, you know, at least for the last one decade, it's not happened. So there've been like three new CEOs of FSSAI and, you know, star ratings to, you know, I think it was IMM Ahmedabad coming out, you know, with the guidance on what would work for front pack labeling to three CEOs. Nothing has happened. So the track record is, you know, unfortunately not very good. So there are various allegations of a food lobby. There are allegations that, you know, even if the guidelines do come, they are cosmetic in nature, if I may say so. So, you know, they are not implemented. That is the issue.
And closely, like this issue closely comes on back of the health drink development that happened recently, where the government is telling the different e-commerce websites to remove the word health drink for malted beverages. Now, what happened to that issue? Have you got any response from the companies of malted beverage?
Not much, nothing convincing other than the standard, we will adhere to the directives. But I have not seen the companies proactively doing anything in this regard. Ultimately, if a mother is buying it for a child, which is loaded with sugar and making the child addicted to sugar at, you know, when the child is 5 years or 4 years old, whatever you call the drink is not going to matter. If there is a directive, but does it address the issue of consumption or ingredients of that particular category? It does not.
How do you see this increase in public and regulatory scrutiny of sugar levels and health claims made by these food product companies? Like, this is the pressure that they needed and now things will change. Do you see that?
So, yes and no. So, there are health advocates, there are doctors, influencers and social media. And I mean, there is a lot that happens compared to, say, the Maggie incident. And now, I mean, so much has changed. There is a lot of pushback on companies today. But the bottom line is that there is a government agency which so far has not taken any compelling stance, even on something like front pack labeling. And there's big food lobby. So the jury is still out on which of the two will prevail on large food companies.
Last thing is, you know, whether regulations come in or not, diktat of the central government comes in or not, but with all this controversy and this whole awareness being created, you know, stock market reaction, where Nestle stock fell close to around 4% in 2 days. Do you see food companies in India, both MNCs and Indian, making changes to their product composition in wake of all these controversies just to be seen to be doing good and on the right side of the law?
So, Kiran, you've raised a very, very important point. You know, for listed companies, like, you know, the stock falling, then the public image. All these companies have signed pledges. There are these international food pledges. You know, they have signed pledges to reduce foods high in sugar and salt and trans fats and all of that. I would say that the noose sort of is tightening. So, image is very, very crucial for these guys. They cannot afford not to put out positive messaging, not to put out information that will see them in good light, because there's going to be investor pressure, influencer backlash, health nutritionist backlash is already there. But two things are there. One is our sales of these products declining? One will be that, and the second will be the local regulation. So what the food companies, whether it's Indian companies or multinationals too, will hinge on these two crucial parameters. Yes, they will say the right things, but are they going to do the right things will depend on these two parameters only. If market share is dropping, point number one, and point number two, if the regulation is very stringent, like in the case of Maggi, what happened? Like there was, you know, there was a 600 crore case, which ultimately Nestle won, but it took so many years. But more importantly, the product was banned from, you know, being sold in the market. You know, even a cigarette is not banned, but Maggi was banned, right?
True. So has Nestle said that in India that they will kind of ultimately bring down the sugar levels, or, you know, just not add it as they do in Europe and US?
No, so far they have not said this. They have said that they have reduced sugar level in Cerelac by 30% over the past 5 years. And they have said that they continue to, you know, evaluate the situation. They continue to evaluate portfolio nutrition in their portfolio.
Right.
But they have not given any specific guidelines as to what percentage or reduction. As of now, they have not. But being a listed company, they will have to sooner than later if this continues, if this escalates.
So we'll have to see two things, consumer sales and government action. These two will decide whether this issue is serious enough to be the next Maggi for Nestle, or it will sort of fade out of public memory within a week or a fortnight.
After speaking to Ratna, I was really interested in knowing the medical implications of having sugar added to a baby food product. And so I turned to Dr. Arun Gupta to understand from him how harmful this practice is.
Additional sugar makes a child eat more because of it has an addicting power. Secondly, it makes sweet things make really pleasing to your tongue, and the child drinks happily. It actually touches parents also emotionally, and the parents also are happy. So it adds on to the, you buy more. So that value which the company brings by adding sugar in India and other countries, because the regulation part is weak here, is basically to increase their sales. Additional of sugar pushes young babies towards obesity, and use of these deceptive, misleading advertisements, making health claims. Even like I give the example of, say, Patanjali biscuits. They were widely advertised on the television saying it will make India healthy. It will make India healthy. Aap Patanjali biscuit khaiye, healthy India banaiye. They are in the court for some other reasons, but the misleading advertisements continue. So it's a larger issue, actually, to my mind. It's not just adding sugar. It's adding sugar and aggressively, deceptively, misleadingly using health claims, projecting your products as healthy, using children in your product advertising. All that actually is the increasing your cash flow.
Why do you think consumers fall prey to these?
I would say the first factor is the marketing, which include health claims on the labels, which includes advertising. A lot of budgets, billions are spent on marketing. In one of the WHO reports yet to be published, we heard that I think 200,000 advertisements are flashed every month in the popular media in India on the food products for children. So whereas the marketing and advertisement of Cerelac is banned in India, any food product under the age 2. We have been monitoring it for since 92 and 2003. The law says you cannot advertise them. by any means. But still, you will see on YouTube, women are showing to clients, some influencers showing to their clients in terms of how to prepare Cerelac, which is a promotion, actually. So they show the brand Cerelac. So it goes on today. We checked it yesterday. And secondly, the marketing, when I say it's deceptive, in the use of children as if all the children need it, use of children in the pictures. In earlier days, it has set a generational image in the minds of people that Cerelac gives rise to healthy babies, bunny babies, all those advertisements I can recall in my life. But might take a generation, but at the same time, to my mind, since it is sold around $250 million worth of Cerelac in India, which is around 2,000 crores annually, it's not less. It means there is some underhand marketing tactics are going on, in my view. Secondly, it comes to the ignorance or preference, which I say, when we talk about this, it's a typical thing, even yesterday or day before yesterday, the Nestle's global CEO said, it's all about choice of the people. It is not. It's not the choice of the people when they are bombarded with advertisements all over the world every day. The choices are made out of the environment. Choices are made out of course, it is made out of convenience also. But the point is, whatever is convenient or whatever the decision of the parents, let it be without marketing advertisements. So that's why I believe that preference of choices is a tactic of industry to keep the regulations away, because they think it's a choice of the people. So selling these things as health, you make money and blame people on their choice.
So where do you think the problem lies?
The problem is that regulations are currently not effective to the level that they can control. That is one part. The second part is implementation of the regulation which exists. For example, foods below the age of 2 are banned for advertising and promotion by any means by the law called Infant Milk Substitute Feeding Bottles and Infant Foods Law in the country. So that law needs to be stringently enforced. Government needs to put up a mechanism to actually monitor and enforce that law. Thirdly, on the content of sugar, the food and there is an infant nutrition regulation, which is weak in the sense that baby cereals should not be allowed to be added sucralose and fructose. But if at all they are needed to be added, it should not increase 20% of the total carbohydrate. And total carbohydrate, it mentions, should not be exceeding 55%. Currently, the Cerelac has 68% carbohydrate.
And why do you think our law enforcement is so lackadaisical?
I think the reason of this is the increasing partnership of the government with the industry. And that's where I see that the public-private partnerships without any policy on conflict of interest. India doesn't have a policy on conflict of interest. In policy making, in the policy development area, we do not have a policy which guides conflict of interest. Now, if the industry sits with the government or the other people together to draft a regulation, so that's the reason I'm saying so. So the point which I make is why industry is allowed to interfere is the whole issue. One of the reasons which I heard that why FSSAI is not acting that on the front of the pack labeling. Because there is a pressure from the small and medium industries of India. Now, there is an association formed by them, which actually is supported by the large food industries. Of course, the pressure of the big multinationals on the policy is much higher than the locals. But everybody fears that if you have regulation, the sales will go down.
Incidentally, this issue is not just endemic to India, but has a global resonance. The big food companies have been caught with their hands in the cookie jar several times in many countries. I speak to Michael Moss, the author of the 2013 best-selling book Sugar, Salt, Fat, that revealed the various tactics adopted by processed food companies. I asked Michael what were the most discerning findings of his research.
So, salt, sugar, fat came about when I sort of gained access to the largest manufacturers of processed food in the United States and in the world, and got access to documents, thousands and thousands of pages of their internal memos and emails and white strategy papers. And then I got interviews with kind of key people in the industry who opened up and revealed even more secrets. And the overwhelming sense you get from that material, which is the basis of the book, Salty Fat, is that this is an industry that's been driving night and day to get us to not just like their products, but to want more and more of them. And part of the strategy they use is extraordinary science to develop formulations that we can't resist, especially using salt, sugar, fat in perfect amounts that drive us crazy and cause cravings. But the other thing they're really, really good at is marketing, is knowing that many people eat for emotional reasons. And so much of their effort then is aimed at getting inside our heads with advertising and kind of repetitive behavior that makes us even more vulnerable to their products.
So this book was released in 2013. You know, in the last 10 years, do you see the company's behavior changing?
Yeah, well, you know, in some ways it's gotten better and it's gotten worse, right? I mean, the better part is that more and more people are aware of what these food companies are up to and everything they do to try to get us to act in a way that's good for them and not for our own health and wellness. But the companies have gotten even smarter in their ability to get us to do their bidding, to get us to think about food in a way that they want us to think about food. So it's actually gotten somewhat harder to go into the grocery store and kind of tell, like, what's good for you and what's like danger and I should be kind of worried about. The other thing that's happened too since 2013 is that the divide, you know, between the haves and the have-nots, between people who have the resources and the knowledge to eat better and healthier and those who don't has grown wider and wider. And so what you see these companies doing is this race to the bottom to exploit the most vulnerable people, not only here in the United States where this industry started, but all around the world now. And so you see them branching out into other countries and starting to dominate the eating habits of people in all around the world in ways that you didn't see even 10 years ago. Everybody in the industry should understand these companies are coming for you now. They grew up in the United States. They invented and developed these products here. There's been increasing government and consumer pressure on these companies to reform here. And in response to that, they're moving around the world to other countries, looking for basically viewing countries like India as the new Wild West in terms of their ability to get more people hooked on their products. So the message I'd want to convey is that they're coming for you with incredibly clever formulations and science and marketing strategies. And it would behoove you to sort of prepare for that and think about ways to deal with that attack, if you will, on India's kind of own natural historic eating patterns, et cetera. Because these companies want to change that to their benefit.
But aren't the government regulations proving to be deterrent for companies?
They're very sensitive, of course, to government regulation, as they would call it, government interference, rules, you know, standards for nutrition, et cetera. So part of, you know, inside the companies are people whose job it is to study those rules and then convey that information to the people formulating the products. And the job of those people following the regulations is to make sure their products just barely meet the standards of whatever country they're marketing to. The flip side of that is that they also know that people's tastes vary around the world. And there are some places in the world where people like sweet things more than other places. And the industry is really good kind of being sensitive to that and formulating products that meet the specific taste, not just the regulations on the taste, but the specific taste that people love. There's a terrific story about the invention of Tang, which was this powdered drink, you know, that was invented for astronauts for use up in space. Very sugary, But back in the 1970s, the company selling Tang, which was this old company called General Foods, was testing it in China, and they realized that the further south they went in China, the more sweeter people liked the formulation, which was a real kind of light bulb moment for this industry, realizing that there are places where they can exploit that higher liking of sugar. And then there are places where maybe they should be more careful about that. Europe is a case in point where until recently, most Europeans couldn't stand the level of sweetness that's prevalent in so many American foods. That's changing now as Europeans become more accustomed to getting these sweeter processed foods.
Why do we as consumers turn a blind eye to that? Because at the end of the day, the ingredients are mentioned, right, on the pack.
Well, speaking of ingredients listed on the pack, there's something called the Nutrition Facts Box here in the United States, and I'm not sure you have that in India, but it kind of tells you how much sugar, how much fats you're getting, protein, etc. I was totally shocked to learn that the Nutrition Facts Box was the invention of none other than the food industry as a way of putting our fears and concerns about what's in these products, easing those fears and concerns by telling us kind of what the nutritional components is. The problem with that is that looking at these products only in terms of their nutrient ingredients doesn't really tell you or answer the question, is this like real food that I should be eating and serving to my kids? And also doesn't sort of tell you what's missing in these products, especially wholesome natural fiber, for example, and other things that are part of, you know, that make all the difference between a piece of fresh fruit and the sugar you get in a soda or even fruit juice. So some of the strategy of the companies have been exploiting kind of our dependence on nutrition information to make our purchase habits. And then the other part of the companies is that they just experiment with new products and they test market and they'll put kids in a room and give them Lunchables and see their and study their reaction. They even do sort of brain scans on consumers to see how the brain responds to their products. And they're just really, really good at determining what we will go crazy for.
But it is a little odd to think that so much money and effort is being put in to, you know, come out with something which is not healthy.
Everything about processed food is designed to be fast and also to be quickly manufactured so it's cheap. And so that's the benefit, if you will, of sort of processed food. The downside is the hidden cost in that speed. And we're getting really close now to a point where for every dollar we spend on processed food, which, by the way, is something like 60 to 70 to 80% of the products in the grocery store we're talking about. For every dollar we spend on those products, we're having to spend another dollar on healthcare and other things to fix the trouble that those products are causing in our lives.
No, it's an important point that you made, because even in India now, we see that fast food, like a pack of noodles or a pack of biscuits, would be much cheaper than fruits.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Yeah, and you have that same situation here in the U.S. where the government is saying, hey, everybody, eat more vegetables, eat more whole fruits. And yet, again, the pricing just isn't there. The incentive, the financial incentive, is to eat these cheap processed foods that are making so many people sick.
So all from the three stakeholders that can put pressure on companies, you know, the shareholders, the government, and the customers, whom do you think would be the most rightly placed to kind of get the companies to change?
We could, through incredibly smart consumer education and not preaching, you know, which the government has tried to do, and it doesn't work very well, but really smart advertising and marketing that conveys to people the opportunity to change their diet and the way they view and value food. You know, that's where I'd put my money if I was betting on where real change can happen.
The revelations of the past week have brought obvious reactions from different quarters. The stock market, the government, and multinational company Nestlé.
But the moot question is, will it be followed by a strong corrective action and policy framework that ends up fixing the system? For a country that is the fifth largest economy in the world, poor enforcement of food safety laws is a clear and big gap. Then there is a conflict of interest involving the food companies sitting at the same table with other stakeholders to frame regulations related to the industry. The government's recent directive to the e-commerce companies to not call malted food drink brands health drinks is a small but encouraging sign for now. But we need to see much more than that. Monitoring food quality to ensure public health and safety is still not a norm in India. Sometimes we also end up exporting the same hazards to other countries. Adopting stringent global standards regarding sugar, salt, and fats is still not our default choice. If the organized food industry suffers from such issues, one can only imagine the situation with the unorganized sector. So that's it for today. This is Kiran Somwanshi from The Economic Times, and you are listening to All That's Wrong with India's Processed Foods Industry only on The Morning Brief. A special thank you to Dr. Arun Gupta, Michael Moss, and Ratna Bhushan for sharing their amazing insights. My colleagues Vinayak Agarwal, Rajas Nayak, and Indranil Bhattacharji helped produce this episode. Thank you for listening, and if you like this episode, do spread the word. Have a wonderful week ahead.